This is a special report from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In New York City this morning, airplanes crashed into the twin towers of the World Trade Center. In Florida, President Bush denounced what he called an apparent act of terrorism.
I have spoken to the vice president, to the governor of New York, to the director of the FBI, and have ordered that the full resources of the federal government go to help the victims and their families, and to conduct a full-scale investigation to hunt down and to find those folks who committed this act. Terrorism against our nation will not stand.
Both Trade Center towers have since collapsed. Another aircraft has crashed into the Pentagon. We'll bring you all the news as it happens in depth. But first, this news update.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. There have been several apparent terrorist attacks on the eastern coast of the United States. Two large airplanes crashed into both of the World Trade Center towers. These occurred 18 minutes apart. Later, both towers collapsed. A short time later, a large plane crashed into the Pentagon. A fourth plane belonging to United Airlines was hijacked. It crashed in western Pennsylvania outside Pittsburgh. The nation's air traffic is completely shut down. All planes have been ordered to land at the nearest airport. NPR's John Nielsen is tracking the story and is with us now. John?
At about 9 a.m. Eastern time this morning, a commercial jetliner crashed into one of New York's twin towers in the city's financial district. The plane was apparently a hijacked American Airlines jet that had been on its way to Los Angeles from Boston. A second plane, also apparently hijacked, crashed into the second tower about 18 minutes later. It was also an American Airlines flight, apparently, en route to Los Angeles from the Dulles Airport in the Washington, D.C. area. The crashes opened huge holes in the sides of the towers as thousands of people were beginning their workdays inside. Wreckage and debris showered into the streets below. One witness compared it to a volcanic eruption. Authorities were trying to evacuate the buildings when they eventually collapsed. Rescue operations are continuing. It's not clear how many people were inside the buildings or how many were killed or injured or how many have been trapped in the wreckage. New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani says he fears the death toll will be horrific. The World Trade Center was attacked once before in 1993. Six people were wounded that time. Six people were killed that time, and 1,000 people were injured. Six Islamic militants were convicted in that bombing and sentenced to life in prison. John Nielsen, NPR News, Washington.
Officials in Iraq say they have shot down a U.S. spy plane. If confirmed, this would be the second shootdown in less than 1 month. A U.S. military spokesman in the Persian Gulf says that an unmanned plane is missing and it's being investigated. The Iraqi state-run media says the plane was shot down this morning near the southern city of Basra. The Iraqi news agency says the plane wreckage involving highly advanced equipment is now being collected. The U.S. Federal Reserve said today, in the wake of a series of devastating attacks on U.S. landmarks, that it is open and operating. A spokesman for the U.S. Federal Reserve says that the agency's discount window will provide liquidity to financial markets as they are needed. Fed spokesman David Skidmore read a short statement on a conference call with reporters a short time ago. He gave no further details. U.S. financial markets are all closed for the day. This is NPR News. The U.S. Federal Reserve says it is open for business and continuing to operate today. The Pentagon was the third building to be attacked today. NPR's Steve Inskeep is outside the Pentagon.
Fire trucks continue spraying water on this gigantic gap that has been blown in the side of the Pentagon. We're told that in the vicinity of that gap, the military has set up what they describe as a triage center to try to treat the most severely wounded first. We have no idea of the number of casualties. I have had an opportunity to speak with some people who were inside the building at the time of the explosion. An Army Lieutenant Colonel told me that after the explosion, he and several other people tried to put together a team to race in and bring out wounded if they could, but the heat from the fire after the initial explosion was so intense that they had no luck. I've spoken to other eyewitnesses who saw people being rescued from the remains of that portion of the building. We're being told that family members of employees at the Pentagon are being asked to travel to the U.S. Navy Annex, which is a building not very far from here. But again, we have no specific word on the number of casualties.
NPR's Steve Inskeep at the Pentagon. We continue to follow the main story today. Apparent terror attacks on the World Trade Center in New York City. Both towers have since collapsed. The U.S. Pentagon outside of Washington, D.C. was struck by a large plane. Also, a hijacked plane belonging to United Airlines crashed today outside of Pittsburgh. Further, a car bomb exploded outside the State Department. No injuries were reported in connection with that car bombing. I'm Corva Coleman, National Public Radio News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, seeking to improve people's lives by nurturing the arts, protecting the environment, seeking cures for diseases, and helping protect children from neglect and abuse.
This is a special report from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A series of terrorist attacks on the United States began in New York City shortly before 9 a.m. Eastern Time this morning. In what many witnesses have described as disbelief, they watched an airliner crash into one of the towers of the World Trade Center in downtown Manhattan. Another plane struck the other Trade Center tower a few minutes later. The next target was the Pentagon across the Potomac River from Washington, D.C. We'll be with you live with news and updates as they become available throughout this afternoon. There is a great deal we do not know at this point, but obviously this Tuesday, September 9th, will be remembered along with Pearl Harbor and Oklahoma City. Here are a few eyewitness accounts of the horror in New York City this morning.
I was sitting in my breakfast table when I heard this loud explosion. I ran downstairs and I saw smoke billowing out of the World Trade Center, and then just moments later another hit, and I live close to a mile away from the Trade Center, and you could feel the heat. You could feel the heat right where I was standing, at least a mile away. It was unbelievable.
I was on my way to work across the Brooklyn Bridge, and I was about a third of the way across heading to Manhattan when I saw a plane. And they're never on this approach on the East River because I walk it every day. And it was coming in over the Manhattan Bridge towards Lower Manhattan, and it banked very slightly towards Brooklyn, which told me that there was something wrong, and I thought it was going to crash. And then all of a sudden it swung over as if it was going towards Newark Airport. And hit the World Trade Center dead on.
Our building is a block east of the Trade Towers, and I did see the explosions, and I worried about whether or not we should evacuate, but we thought not to because the street was so bad, and some part of the structure collapsed, and it's not on fire, but our whole apartment and the whole building is full of smoke, and we can't get out the front door because there's so much smoke debris there, but we're told that it's not fire. The streets right now are completely empty. So we've wet a bunch of towels. We've just wet a bunch of towels. I've just put my cat in a carrier. Cars are covered with dust. My whole apartment is covered with dust. So it looks like, though, that I don't think fire is going to be our problem. So that's all.
In New York City, witnesses of today's crashes into the World Trade Center. New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani has already given voice to the fear that all of us knew from the first moment that these incidents began. Casualties are apparently massive. NPR's Peter Kenyon joins me here in Studio 3A. Peter, welcome.
Hi, Neil.
What can you tell us? What's the latest?
Well, as you said, the thing that everybody wants to know and which we do not have any firm numbers on is how many people are hurt and possibly killed. There is one police official in New York who said that the casualties could be in the thousands. We do know that some of the people were evacuated between the time that the planes crashed into the towers and the times when they collapsed. We have no idea how many. We do know that approximately 50,000 people work in those two towers on an average working day. So the reports of casualties are sketchy. The airlines are saying that they have lost two planes each, American and United. The American statement said that 164 people were on the two planes that they lost. And United lost one, and they are very worried about another one that was en route I believe, across the country. The fourth flight, there was two in the World Trade Center. There's one in the Pentagon and one near Pittsburgh. We're not sure if the one near Pittsburgh is related to the other two. And there's another plane that they are very concerned about. That's United Airlines.
So if we can speculate a little bit at this point, it does seem that this was a coordinated attempt to hijack at least four aircraft and crash them into buildings.
It has all the earmarks of an organized terrorist attack. President Bush immediately called it an apparent terrorist attack, and he ordered a nationwide investigation to, quote, hunt down the folks who committed this act. There have been no claims of responsibility except one anonymous claim from a Palestinian group, and a senior official with that same group quickly denied it. Terrorism experts have also talked about people who have committed terrorist acts in the past, such as Osama bin Laden. But the Taliban in Afghanistan now is saying that they condemn this attack and they don't believe that Osama bin Laden was involved. So we really have no solid information on responsibility. But clearly this was some kind of organized attack. It doesn't appear that it could possibly have been an accident.
Tell us what you know about the incident at the Pentagon. This was the third plane that crashed, obviously, into the United States Military Command Center.
It crashed right into at first report was a helicopter pad, and then there were also reports of a direct hit on the Pentagon, a gaping hole. Witnesses, our reporters and others, saw a huge hole and an orange fireball going up in one side of that five-sided structure. Of course, much of the key nerve center material is underground in the Pentagon, but still, it's a huge direct hit on the center of the U.S. defense establishment. The Pentagon was evacuated, so was the Capitol, the Treasury building, the State Department. There was a report of a car bomb outside the State Department. Officials were clearly scrambling to respond to an attack that appeared to come with no warning whatsoever.
And all across the country, there are security alerts at buildings from the Sears Tower in Chicago. Yankee Stadium has already been evacuated, and the game scheduled for today has been canceled.
Starting in New York, the New York Stock Exchange is closed down. The United Nations has been evacuated. Mayor Giuliani is basically asking people to just clear out of the lower end of Manhattan. They canceled the Democratic primary, the mayoral elections there Tuesday. The whole state of California is on alert. There's an emergency cabinet meeting there. As you mentioned, the Sears Tower in Chicago has been evacuated. Colorado is setting up emergency response centers. It's just one aviation expert has called this now what he said is the most audacious terrorist attack that's ever taken place in the world.
And all of the flights around the country have been canceled, and in Canada as well.
The FAA has canceled all U.S. Takeoffs. Transatlantic flights that were already in the air were diverted to Canada, and it just has snarled. That will be probably one of the most immediate after effects, is the snarling up of the economy and the trade and the traffic and just people moving from place to place. And the other will be communications. It's extremely hard to get a cell phone to work in the New York area. There's just hard to find out if relatives and loved ones and family are all right in New York. And I think that mess will be with us for some time.
Obviously, the injured people are being moved to hospitals outside the Pentagon and obviously in New York City as well.
Yes, we're getting reports from certainly from the New York hospitals already that hundreds and hundreds of patients are already coming in, and they're expecting many more waves. So I think they seem very confident. The medical officials seem ready to respond to all of this, but certainly there's no way to tell how bad it is yet.
As you mentioned, the President of the United States was in Florida this morning, where he made a statement that this was an apparent terrorist attack. This even before the third incident at the Pentagon happened. Is he on his way back to Washington?
He did come back. They are not disclosing his location. That's standard policy in this sort of situation. But there have been reports that the President and all of the people in the command and control structure are safe.
The Pentagon, an obvious target for an anti-American attack, the World Trade Center, why would that be picked, do you think?
It is also a symbol. It's a symbol simply by the virtue of its size. And it's a symbol of U.S. economy and their economic strength and their leadership position in the world. It, of course, is not the first attack. There explosions there from the basement years ago. That trial only just recently wrapped up, not that long ago. So clearly there's a history there.
Peter Kenyon, you'll be with us throughout the day.
I will, Neil.
Thanks very much. We appreciate it. Again, we have news happening all over. But first, let us go to New York City. And Stanley Mises joins us now on the line. He lives just a couple of blocks from the World Trade Center. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Neil.
Can you go through this one more time and just describe what it was you witnessed as it happened this morning?
Well, this morning I was sitting by my desk, which is by my window, and I live about 10 blocks from the Trade Center, when this incredibly loud explosion occurred, and then it was followed very, very rapidly by a sensation of heat. I mean, we're talking 10 blocks away. You could feel the heat from the explosion right outside my window. And I ran downstairs and saw the World Trade Center on fire, which was, you know, the mind just doesn't accept something like that. seeing a building like that on fire, you think it's a movie set. Then the streets filled up with people all over the place. There seemed to be a fairly organized sense of things on the street, as the street I live on, West Broadway, is the through street for emergency ambulances and emergency vehicles. Immediately, there seemed to be some sort of setup where vehicles were allowed to pass through and people remained on the sidewalks, watching the smoke billowing from the Trade Center. And then the second hit occurred, which you just cannot imagine it. As I said before, if the mind couldn't accept the first one, the second one was just terrifying. And with that, people started to run in all sorts of directions. Now, following that, there was a moment, I wouldn't say of calm, but at least people were just standing and watching as vehicles were going through, and there was some sense of what might have happened when the South Tower collapsed. And you saw sparks and debris, and again, the idea that a 110-story building just imploded, just fell down in front of your eyes, is more than remarkable. I mean, it's just a sight that you just cannot erase from your eyes. And if that were not impressive enough, if that were not stunning enough, when the North Tower fell, there was a smoke ball, like an avalanche, that immediately rushed up the street, and 10 blocks north on Chambers Street, there was an enormous cloud, sparks flying everywhere, people flying out of this smoke ball. So much the smoke debris was so thick, I could not see the neon sign on the restaurant across the street from me. And people were just pouring out of it, absolutely covered as if they had been sprayed by some sort of gray frozen dust machine. It was the most remarkable sight I will ever see in my life.
And all of this, everything that you're describing, happened in less than 2 hours.
Correct. Within an hour and a half.
Can you tell us what it looks like now?
Well, this part of the neighborhood has now been blocked off from street traffic. There is the occasional ambulance or police vehicle passing through. Folks have been held back from Worth Street on South. What you do see is an awful lot of camera crews at this point, and you know, police, emergency personnel, and all sorts of ancillary personnel coming up and down the street. Some sort of relative calm has returned to at least this part of the neighborhood.
There is going to be a gigantic hole in the skyline next you look where the World Trade Center used to be.
It's impossible to imagine. I'm a native New Yorker. I've lived here all my life. I've seen the skyline interrupted by construction. I have never seen it interrupted by destruction.
You mentioned the cinematic aspect, and I guess to some degree that's how we see these unreal events in our lives. But we went through a progression on this day when the first accident, well, you think of the plane that crashed into the Empire State Building in 1947, an Army B-25 bomber in a dense fog crashed into the Empire State Building. You think of the Hindenburg disaster. As these things began to mount, what were you seeing?
Well, what I was seeing was certainly the first thing that flashed through your mind was that, again, it was a terrorist attack, because I suppose the World Trade Center just immediately brings that to mind. After the first explosion, as you say, and as I said before, it did seem like it could have been staged. After the second one, it turned into Day of the Locust to the nth power. It was mass terror like I have never seen in my life. People flying in every direction, people crying, people yelling. Utter chaos. Absolute utter chaos. I will say that within a very short period of time, this chaos seemed to be supplanted by a kind of organized, determined effort by people to get out of the area. And I say organized and determined because there just didn't seem to be any sort of, selfishness involved. People were helping other people. People were wheeling other people. People were holding other people, you know, holding hands and running, leading people to the right places, allowing people into their homes, into their doorways, into their vestibules. It was, and still remains, stunning.
Stanley Mises, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
An eyewitness account of some of the events in Lower Manhattan today. We'll continue after a break. You're listening to a special report from NPR News. This is a special report from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We now have a little bit more detailed information on the four aircraft involved in today's crashes or that were hijacked. United Flight 93, a Boeing 757, left Newark at 8:01 a.m., headed for San Francisco with 38 passengers, two pilots, and five flight attendants. That flight apparently crashed near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The second plane was United 175, a Boeing 767. It left Boston's Logan Airport at 7:58 this morning, bound for Los Angeles. That aircraft carried 56 passengers, two pilots, seven flight attendants. American Airlines says Flight 11, a Boeing 767 en route from Boston to Los Angeles with 81 passengers, 9 flight attendants, and 2 pilots is missing, along with Flight 77, a Boeing 757 operating from Washington Dulles to Los Angeles with 58 passengers, 4 flight attendants, and 2 pilots. Those are the four aircraft involved in crashes today, two of them at the World Trade Center in New York City, one at the Pentagon, one apparently outside of Pittsburgh and crashed into a field. Joining us now is NPR's Don Gagne, normally at the White House, not at the White House now, Don?
Now they've just widened the security perimeter around the White House. I am at the corner of I and Connecticut, which is a full 3 blocks north of the White House. At 9:41, they cleared everybody out, staff, press, grounds crew, everybody, the park police and Secret Service cleared everybody out of the White House. We were initially told to wait in Lafayette Park, which, of course, is right across the street from the White House. None of us knew what was going on at that point. We had, of course, heard about the World Trade Center, those crashes there, and just at that time, we were hearing about the attack on the Pentagon. So as the morning has progressed, things have actually been remarkably quiet here. We're waiting for information. President Bush, of course, was not at the White House when all of this broke this morning. He was in Florida promoting his education initiatives. He was actually reading to children when his chief of staff, Andrew Card, walked up on the stage and whispered into his ear, telling him what was going on. So we know he is flying, he's left Florida. We don't exactly know where he is going to. We know that Air Force One is in the air making that trip. And mostly we're just waiting for information as people gather on this ever-widening perimeter around the White House.
Don Gagne, thanks very much. We appreciate it and hope that as you get more information, obviously the streets of Washington, our offices are in downtown Washington, D.C., and evidence of some chaos, obviously not panic, but chaos as people spilled out of all sorts of office buildings and basically headed home.
Right. I mean, I did just witness one interesting scene. I mean, you get a sense of the mood out here. Everybody is still trying to soak this in. There are these little vendors all over Washington, and the one here at I in Connecticut had one of those portable radios blaring the news out at the top of the hour, and everybody just stopped and listened. In the midst of that, a man looked to be in his mid-30s, rode up on a bicycle, and he yelled in the middle of the crowd that these attacks were appropriate retribution against America, and that justice was done because America has been an oppressor around the world. He was immediately pelted with food and other debris, and the police came in and talked to him and took his backpack, his knapsack off his back, and walked it out into the middle of the streets and had bomb-sniffing dogs come and look at it. And the whole scene kind of played out for about 10, 15 minutes just on this street corner a few blocks from the White House. Ultimately, they found nothing. They gave him his knapsack back, and he rode his bike away as people yelled derogatory comments in his direction, and he shouted them back.
Don Gagne, we'll be back in touch with you throughout the afternoon. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Joining us now is Richard Schultz. He's Director of International Security Studies at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University in Medford, Massachusetts. And welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Can you give us some idea of, this is obviously a large and apparently coordinated effort. It would seem that this would involve a large element of logistical coordination to pull something like this off.
I think you're absolutely right. And it would require time in terms of getting it in place in order to accomplish the acts that we've seen today. And it raises a really big question about early warning. We have very sophisticated, supposedly, intelligence capability that is to give us warning. And as far as we can tell, at least from where we sit now, there wasn't any warning.
Another big question, and we'll get back to that one, but another big question appears to be airport security, not just at one airport, but systemic problems in airport security.
It's systemic, and again, one of the things that we have to realize is that when you build a mousetrap, you know, mice find ways around it. And so it's a constant game of check and counter-check. And apparently, they got through security. We're able to take over planes. And I want to speculate that at least in three of the instances, they, I would think, had someone as part of their team that could fly the planes, because I just can't imagine a pilot, if he were told you're going to fly into the World Trade Center, would do that.
Even with a gun to his head?
Even with a gun to his head. I mean, your dead's dead.
And that raises obvious questions then about the crash, which we do not know to be connected outside of Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I find that to be an interesting difference.
To your knowledge, how many cells, organizations around the world might be capable of this kind of coordinated and carefully thought-out attack?
I think just a few, you know, and I also... there'll be a great deal of speculation in terms of whether or not whoever pulled this off had some degree of state-level support as well. But it's not, you know, the obscure and the unknown groups would be less likely, and maybe we might go further and say it would be impossible to imagine them doing something like this.
Considerable financial resources would be.
It'd have to be. You know, just think of the if you're going to plan something, first you have to go through an extensive collection of information. So you're going to have, you know, your intelligence agents, and terrorist organizations have those in place to do the observation, to figure out the weaknesses and so on. So it's pretty significant.
And again, not just in one location,
mm-hmm.
Dulles Airport in Washington, D.C., Logan Airport outside of in Boston.
Right. And you know, I know Logan Airport rather well. And this is an amazing event that has happened in Boston, that they breached and took two planes out of Boston.
Now, inevitably, we start to look overseas during these events,
mm-hmm.
also remembering that Oklahoma City, a lot of instinctual reaction was Middle East, and obviously that turned out to be totally incorrect. But in Nablus on the West Bank today, thousands of Palestinians celebrated Tuesday's terror attacks in the United States. I'm reading an Associated Press Wire story here chanting, "God is great," distributing candy to passersby, as their leader Yasser Arafat said that he was horrified by this.
Mm-hmm. I remember Oklahoma City well and the reaction that it engendered. But in this instance, I would find it hard to believe that a homegrown group could do something like this. Oklahoma City was pretty crude when you think about it, and you know, from what we know about it now. This is much more sophisticated. I'm not aware, although, you know, it could be possible, that some of the domestic fanatical groups that are in the United States could do something at this level.
We should note that obviously the World Trade Center is not on Wall Street, but it is near Wall Street and a symbol of America's financial resources. The Federal Reserve today seeking to provide assurances that the nation's banking system will be protected following the terrorist attacks, said Tuesday it stood ready to provide additional money to banks if needed. Quote, "The Federal Reserve system is open and operating. The discount window is available to meet liquidity needs," the Fed said in a two-sentence statement issued here in Washington, D.C. The promise to supply additional money to the banking system, similar to a pledge the Fed issued on the morning after the October 1987 stock market crash, when the market plunged by more than 500 points. And around the world, key financial indices sank on stock markets, and some European airlines were canceling flights to the United States and recalled planes that were already in the air. This obviously having a worldwide impact on many different levels. If you will stay with us, Richard, we're going to go now to Tony Randolph, who joins us now in Boston. Are you with us, Tony? Hello, Tony Randolph.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, this is Neil Conan at NPR. You are at Logan Airport?
I'm at the American Airlines terminal at Logan Airport. And there are a lot of passengers milling around, though not as many as you would expect here. A lot of them have been trying to find something to do or some place to go. I talked to a woman who was flying from London to visit her son in Cleveland, and the pilot told them that they were being diverted to Boston because of a tragedy in New York. They didn't find out until they were on the ground what happened. And now that they're here in Boston, they can't get a hotel because people who had been checking out to leave the city are remaining in their hotels, and they're not quite sure what they're going to do now.
Three of the four flights that we know to have been diverted today left from Logan Airport. Any statement from airport officials?
The airport, Massport, which runs Logan Airport, is going to have a press conference shortly. American Airlines is referring all questions to their corporate headquarters in Texas.
And obviously investigations are underway, and people are not going to be willing to disclose a lot of information. But there must be, as you look around the terminal there, are people gathering relatives?
Not in the terminal. A lot of these people are people who were diverted here, who are passing through, who have no real connection to Boston, who just happen to get dropped off here and don't have a way to get out. There are people who were from Boston who just went back home if they were having travel plans today.
And is there anything else you can let us know now that has explains anything that happened this morning?
Well, the airlines are telling us they don't have any information. The people who are here at the terminal say they don't know anything more than what they're telling the passengers, which is they don't have information on when they'll get out, except they will not get out of Boston today because there are no flights, no American Airlines flights will be leaving Boston today.
Thank you very much, Tony.
You're welcome.
Tony Randolph of member station WBUR speaking with us from Logan Airport in Boston, Massachusetts, where three of the four flights that were hijacked were departed from this morning. In New York, we have a statement that was made a few moments ago by New York Governor George Pataki. Let's listen to that.
The magnitude is just something that has us all really horrified, but we can't quantify it. All we can do at this point is try to do everything we can to help those at risk, help provide the services to those who have been injured, help try to get people from the area as orderly as possible. We're going to continue to do that. At this point, that has got to be the priority.
Do you have any sense, Governor Pataki, this is Sharon Deisenhaus, of whether or not the hospitals in the downtown area are anywhere close to equipped to handle the expected numbers?
Obviously, you can never predict something like this, the tragedy of this magnitude, but we're doing everything we can, the hospitals, the emergency services, everyone is pitching in, and we just have to, at this point, focus on providing that support, providing that emergency services, and doing the best we can for those whose lives are still at risk.
Governor, what can New Yorkers be doing? Is there anything that they can be doing to assist in this, whether it's blood donations, whether it's off-duty police officers making their way in? How can New Yorkers help?
Absolutely.
That New York Governor George Pataki speaking earlier today. With us on the line is Richard Schultz, a director of international security studies at Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University in Medford, Massachusetts. And Richard, over the past couple of years, particularly as fears of biological and chemical terrorist attacks have spread across the United States, there have been civil defense drills in places like New York City, and these are not uncommon in and around the Pentagon, another target of today's terrorist attacks. If one was going to happen, is New York City one of the better prepared places?
Well, it should be. Now, in the last few years, we've had a new concept introduced to us in the defense world. It's called consequence management. And in English, what it means is how you prepare for events like this. And we have had training exercises in New York and Boston and Washington and elsewhere. So there has been attention to the response and how you coordinate state, city, federal agencies to respond to such situations. And so that system, which has been developed, although not completely, is being tested today.
New York City, obviously one of the great medical centers of the country, and many, many hospitals on Manhattan.
Right, exactly. And of course, you know, this has also been done within the context of what's called an event that involves a weapon of mass destruction. Now, that's not at play here. So one would hope, anyway, that the effort to have a consequence management strategy is paying off today.
I guess a definition of a weapon of mass destruction, policymakers have one, but a little hard to tell the difference sometimes.
Well, it really means a chemical, biological, or nuclear. In this case, as far as I know, but we don't know, what could have been on the plane, especially from a biological
But again, we have absolutely no indication that anything other than aircraft crashing into
right.
buildings was responsible for any of the damage today. I think we have to
right.
be very careful and make sure that people understand that.
Absolutely.
The Pentagon, a place that I've spent a fair amount of time in and a place where there are constant drills.
Yeah, and a place I was supposed to be Friday morning at 8:30, this coming Friday at 8:30 to work on some issues that I'm consulting with. They do have many drills, but, you know, that is a building that is in many ways dilapidated. Remember, when it was built, it was supposed to be temporary, and that was in World War II. And so where, you know, modern buildings may stand more of a chance, the Pentagon is a if you hit it or hit near it, it's a really soft target. And I've only seen some of the visuals, but the initial report was that it hit that helo pad, the helicopter pad.
Just outside one part of the building.
Yeah, right outside the south part, but there would be fuel tanks there.
Richard, stay with us, will you, please?
Sure.
Richard Schultz of the Fletcher School of Law at Tufts University in Medford. NPR News will provide special coverage throughout the day and night to keep you informed on today's events, events President Bush has called an apparent terrorist attack. We'll continue here in Studio 3A until 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Then Noah Adams, Linda Wertheimer, and Robert Siegel will continue news coverage of today's events on All Things Considered and coverage throughout the night. This is NPR News.
Support for National Public Radio comes from NPR stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, Rockefeller Brothers Fund, providing support for NPR cultural programming through a Charles E. Culpepper Endowment Grant, the W. Alton Jones Foundation, supporting public understanding of the importance of healthy ecosystems for people's lives, www.wajones.org. And the Freedom Forum, creator of The Newseum, the first interactive museum of news, located in Arlington, Virginia. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
This is special news coverage from NPR News. NPR will provide coverage of today's events throughout the day and night, events President Bush has called an apparent terrorist attack. I'm Neil Conan in NPR's Studio 3A. Our coverage will continue here until 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Then Noah Adams, Linda Wertheimer, and Robert Siegel will continue NPR's special news coverage to keep you informed on today's events, what's happening, where it's happening, and, as best we're able, what's behind the events. This is NPR special news coverage. This is a special report from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're continuing with our special live coverage of today's events following terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center in New York City. Aircraft, airliners crashed into each of the World Trade Center towers. Both have since collapsed. A third airliner crashed into the Pentagon across the Potomac River outside of Washington, D.C. A fourth airliner crashed outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. As yet, there is no confirmation that that was involved in any of the day's other incidents. We have no word on numbers of casualties, except that they are, as you might imagine, very, very large, and we'll continue to bring you up to date on that as soon as we can. NPR's Mary Ann Akers joins us now from our bureau in Chicago. Mary Ann, welcome.
Hi, Neil. Thank you.
You're covering the FAA side of this, so what can you tell us about these airliners and what happened?
Well, I've been on a continuous conference call since I arrived here this morning with the FAA, and the FAA essentially has shut down all air traffic nationwide. It's called a ground stop. They have never in the FAA's history done this. It means that no airplanes can take off from any airport in the U.S. Some aircraft will be allowed to land. The latest information I got from the conference call, according to FAA spokesman Paul Takamoto, is that there are 50 commercial aircraft left in the U.S. airspace right now as we speak. They have no known problems, and all are within 40 to 50 miles of their destination. Also, 22 international flights will be allowed to land in the U.S. They will not say where they're going to land, and of course, they're going to have very stringent security measures in place.
As I understand it, Canada has also suspended flights?
That's what I hear. The FAA could not confirm that when I just got off the conference call. Also, transatlantic flights to the U.S. are being diverted to to Canada. However, they are allowing these 22 international flights from where, I'm not sure, but they will be allowed to land here in the U.S. Also, American Airlines and United Airlines both confirmed that they did lose two jets each. Of course, the American Airlines jets were involved in the World Trade Center crash, and United did say that one of its jets crashed outside Pittsburgh. It would not say where the other jet crashed for security reasons.
You follow this all the time, Marianne. I can't remember the last time an aircraft was hijacked out of an American airport. Is there any word that you have today about any idea of what might have happened to allow three hijackings in Boston and a fourth in at Dulles Airport outside of Washington?
Absolutely not, Neil. At this time, the FAA is saying very little. They're referring, you know, all calls like that to the FBI. And of course, the FBI is being very cautious with the information it's releasing at this time. I can also tell you the FAA has shut down all the airports in New York and Washington. Other airports are open. Of course, flights aren't allowed to take off there. But for the aircraft that are in the air, and again, I said there are 50 commercial aircraft left in the airspace at this time, they have no known problems and all will be allowed to land at the destination of the pilot's choice.
Dozens of people aboard each of those aircraft that were hijacked and later crashed, that is regrettably only the beginning of a very, very long casualty list. You're more familiar with how these sorts of operations are mounted following disasters. What do you know, and what do you anticipate will happen?
Well, of course, the last major crash was Alaska Airlines, and this is a tremendous amount of casualties in one day. I mean, we're talking four major airliners, and the airlines, of course, are working hard to begin to put together a list so that they can contact the families. And they're working closely with the FBI because, as President Bush has said, this is a suspicious terrorist attack. He's treating it as such. So the airlines are having to work with federal authorities in this case. So it's not the usual process of a plane crash where the airline will contact the family members and the NTSB will work with the airlines to contact family members. The NTSB really doesn't have much involvement in this case since it is being treated as terrorism. So the FBI in this case is taking over.
There must be dozens, hundreds of people terrified for relatives and friends who they knew were flying today. Is there any advice that you could give them at this point?
Well, at this point, they're not allowed to fly anyway, and it's just
no.
A very...
I'm talking about relatives who are frightened for their relatives
who
were
the relatives
perhaps
who are frightened.
Up in the air.
Right. Well, obviously, if they know that their loved one was on a particular flight, you know, on an American flight or a United flight, they should call the airline to get the information that they need. That's where they're going to get any information on whether their loved one had made that flight, whether they, you know, are potentially at an airport where people aren't allowed to leave. That's another possibility. They could call the destination airport, or they could call the airport where their loved one was supposed to have taken off from. So the best suggestion I have is for them to call the airline.
Is there there's an inclination, if you're not at the airport already, to meet a flight, which is not going to be making it in the case of the crashed airliners, is if you're not at the airport, is there a reason to go to speak with the airline officials there?
There is, because the airline officials could well have information. There's also a good chance they could call the FBI office in their area. That's another place they could try and get information, because, of course, the FBI is heavily involved in this, is taking the lead on this.
Marianne Akers, thanks very much.
You're welcome, Neil.
Okay. Marianne Akers speaking with us from NPR's Chicago Bureau, and we're going to go now to New York City to Marianne Kuhn, who has some information. Hello, Marianne.
Hi.
Thank you for joining us. What can you tell us?
I am at the Department of Public Health in the city, and I came here because downstairs they have set up a sort of triage center for people with minor injuries. We're right just above, just north of City Hall, and I was down there when the second building was collapsed, which made a huge boom and more smoke. And actually, I guess I was there when the first one collapsed too, and people were running, screaming and running and crying away from that explosion. I think some people thought there was another explosion at City Hall, but I think that is not true. That hasn't been confirmed at all. And then as more time passed after those collapses, that some ambulances started bringing people who had been in the buildings or outside the buildings when the collapse happened. I spoke to three fire marshals who'd been evacuated after they were trying to help. And so they were at a fountain, which is right out in front of the building I'm in, washing debris off their bodies in a fountain. One of them said he saw people jumping out of the windows while he was down there, and when the building actually collapsed, he said he could only save himself. And he'd responded to the emergency with a group of volunteer fire marshals. There were 10 of them, and he said there were only 3 with him now, and he was very worried about what had happened to the rest.
Because there was this period between the crashes and then the collapses followed about an hour later.
Exactly, and I think, and there was even a period between the two collapses, and I think each time there was a break, rescue workers tried to go toward what was happening and try to help people, but then there would be these huge booms, and wherever people were, there were just clouds of thick, thick dust. I mean, downstairs we've been seeing people, anybody who was near it, just covered with dust, caked with this sort of ash gray dust. One man coming out said that he had been in dust so thick he thought he was never going to make it through, and that he was saved by the flash of a photographer's camera, which let him see enough to get out of the situation. Others said that they couldn't see anything, but when the dust cleared, they did see bodies around on the ground. I spoke to one person who'd been on the 87th floor, who ended up running down the stairs because the elevators weren't working, and he's worried that his colleagues are still there. Another person said that she came here in an ambulance and that there were people with their skin peeling off in the ambulances. So it's really a horror scene.
I assume that every hospital within reach, and there are many, is being involved in this.
Right. The mayor has just spoken. He was on national television, which is, I'm now upstairs in the Department of Public Health, and they have a television. It's been very hard to figure out who's where, but he now said that he was actually at the building between the two explosions, and he also said he saw people jumping out of the window. I think he was trapped for a while, and now he's headed to another emergency center. But he said that there are over 100 hospitals in the city, in Westchester County, and in New Jersey that are being used. He's instructing everyone to leave Lower Manhattan. It's blocked off from Canal Street, which is, you know, the lower third of
Manhattan.
The island.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is he wants to get thousands of ambulances down there to help the people who are trying to get out. The subways outside of Manhattan are working, but in Manhattan, it doesn't seem like there's much public transportation that's working. And the mayor said it's impossible to describe the level of anger at anyone who could do something like this.
Obviously, pretty far down the list of concerns at this point. It was primary day in New York City, the runoff, a mayoral primary that has been canceled as well.
Right.
Marianne Kuhn, thank you very much, and keep us up to date, please.
Okay, well.
Marianne Kuhn of member station WNYC speaking with us from downtown in New York City. Richard Schultz is still with us, the director of international security studies at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University in Medford, Massachusetts. As you listen to all of this, Richard, this is clearly far and away the biggest event and the worst event of its kind ever to hit the United States.
Well, it is, and I was trying to think, what is it comparable to? And the only thing that I can come up with is Pearl Harbor.
We mentioned that at the top of the broadcast. Indeed,
yeah.
Pearl Harbor or Oklahoma City are the only things on this scale in terms of assaults on the mainland of the United States.
Right. I mean, it's enormous. I find the...
Richard, I don't mean to cut you off, but Steve Inskeep joins us now from the Pentagon NPR. Steve Inskeep, what can you tell us, Stephen?
Neil, what I can tell you is that fire crews here continue to fight this fire. I'm sure you've heard descriptions of this building blown into cross-section, and Pentagon officials now are attempting to reorganize. I don't want to say that there's really been confusion here. People have been remarkably calm, but they've had considerable difficulty considering that this is the building from which you would coordinate the response to something like what has happened today. And, Neil, I'm being told that early in the morning, as the explosions struck the World Trade Center, that the National Military Command Center was brought into full gear, as you would expect. That's the complex of rooms from which they would coordinate a response. But as the morning went on, that center itself began to fill with smoke, and Pentagon officials are telling us that that has had to be evacuated. As far as we know, the most senior Pentagon officials are okay and functioning and in this area somewhere, but it is still there's still some difficulty in getting things set and getting things coordinated to prepare to respond.
What you hear behind Steve's voice is the sound of helicopters, and that is going to be a constant and a report outside anywhere in Washington area today, and especially outside of the Pentagon. We've also heard that F-16 aircraft were patrolling the skies over the Pentagon. Steve, there are, obviously, in the case of nuclear war, there were preparations made for alternate National Military Command Centers. To your knowledge, that must be where response is being coordinated now?
Neil, I have to apologize. I'm having great difficulty hearing you because of a helicopter coming overhead. I'm very near a field, actually, where a number of medical helicopters and other helicopters have basically set this up as an impromptu landing area. And as this chopper with a red cross on the side, a military chopper, a medevac chopper, puts down, I can hear you a little bit better. And forgive me if you want to ask that question again.
I was asking if, to your knowledge, an alternate National Military Command Center has been activated and where that the leaders of our country might be now.
Actually, I can't give you specific information about this. Of course, there are plans for this and any other scenario right up to nuclear destruction. So without a doubt, there is an alternate site. But Pentagon officials, including some senior Pentagon officials that we've seen around the outskirts of the building here today, have had some difficulty getting a handle themselves on exactly what is going on because this blow has done such severe damage to their communications, to their infrastructure.
Steve Inskeep, obviously, stay with us throughout the afternoon and bring us up to date as you can.
I will.
Appreciate it. NPR's Steve Inskeep speaking with us outside the Pentagon across the river from Washington, D.C. Again, three aircraft crashed into targets on the east coast of the United States earlier today. Two airliners crashed each into one of the two towers, the twin towers of the World Trade Center in New York City. Both of those towers have subsequently collapsed. A third plane crashed into the Pentagon across the river from Washington, D.C. We don't know the numbers of casualties yet, except that they will be very high. A fourth plane crashed outside of Pittsburgh. We will be here with you on NPR News throughout the afternoon to give you special live coverage. We would like to thank some of those we spoke with this hour, including Marianne Akers of NPR, Don Gagne of NPR, Steve Inskeep of NPR, Marianne Kuhn of member station WNYC, and we also spoke with Tony Randolph of member station WBUR, and Richard Schultz of the Fletcher School of Law has been with us throughout the afternoon. This is a special report from NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, Book Magazine for the Passionate Reader, featuring books, authors, and articles that read between the lines in bookstores and online at bookmagazine.com. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, making grants to improve the health and healthcare of all Americans, on the web at rwjf.org. And the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, supporting efforts of the World Health Organization and others to eradicate polio, GatesFoundation.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
NPR News will provide special coverage throughout the day and night to keep you informed on today's events, events President Bush has called an apparent terrorist attack. We'll continue here in Studio 3A until 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Then Noah Adams, Linda Wertheimer, and Robert Siegel will continue news coverage of today's events. NPR News will provide special news coverage throughout the day and night. I'm Neil Conan, and this is NPR News.